I had to laugh thinking about a year or so ago saying, I'm a mess. I don't have a word for what I am now. This is. Yeah, I have to read from the book because some the dictation. I cleaned up a lot of it this morning, but I did miss a lot as well. Apologies again for the funkiness. When I read Christiane's account of her childhood, I sometimes was reminded of descriptions of life in a concentration camp. The following scenes are two examples. Quote from Christiane F. At first, we did it to harass other children. We'd grab a child, shut him in an elevator, and push all the buttons. We held on to the second elevator so the first one had to jiggle its way up to the top, stopping at every floor. They often did the same thing to me, especially when I was coming back with the dog and had to get home for supper on time. Then they pushed all the buttons, so it took forever to get to the 12th floor, and Ajax got terribly nervous. It was mean to push all the buttons when someone was in a big hurry. He would end up peeing in the elevator. But it was even meaner to take a kid's wooden spoon away from him. All the little kids always took a long wooden soup ladle out with them because that was the only way we could reach the elevator buttons. Without the ladle, you were completely helpless. If you lost it, or the other children took it away from you had to walk up the 11 flights of stairs. Of course, none of the other children ever helped you out, and the grown-ups thought you just wanted to play in the elevator and make it break down. One time, one of my pet mice ran into the grass, which we weren't allowed to walk on. We couldn't find it again. I was a little sad, but I was comforted by the thought that the mouse would like it much better outside than in the cage. My father picked that evening to come into my room and look into the mouse cage. He asked in a funny voice, "How come there are only two? Where's the third one?" I didn't even notice there was anything wrong when he asked in such a funny way. My father never did like the mice, and he kept telling me I should give them away. I told him the mouse had run away outside on the playground. My father looked at me as though he had gone crazy. Then I knew he was going to go on one of his wild rampages. He shouted and started right in hitting me. He kept on hitting me, and I was trapped on my bed and couldn't get away. He had never hit me like that before, and I thought he was going to kill me. Then, when he started letting my sister have it too, I had a few seconds to get free, and I instinctively tried to get to the window. I think I really would have jumped from the 12th floor. But my father grabbed me and threw me back on the bed. My mother was probably crying in the doorway again, but I didn't even see her. I didn't see her until she threw herself between me and my father and started pummeling him. He was beside himself. He knocked my mother down onto the floor. All of a sudden, I was more afraid for her than for myself. I went over to them. She tried to escape into the bathroom and bolt the door, but my father was holding her by the hair. As usual, there was wash soaking in the bathtub, because so far we hadn't been able to afford a washing machine. My father stuck my mother's head into the tub full of water. Somehow or other, she managed to get loose. I don't know whether he let her go or whether she got herself free. My father disappeared into the living room. He was white as a sheet. My mother went and got her coat. She left the apartment without saying a word. That was, without a doubt, one of the most awful moments of my life, when my mother simply walked out of the apartment without a word and left us alone. My first thought was, Now he's going to come back and start hitting me again. But everything was quiet in the living room, except for the television, which was on. And Alice comments, "No one seriously doubts that the inmates of a concentration camp underwent terrible suffering. But when we hear about the physical abuse of children, we react with astonishing equanimity. Depending on our ideology, we say, that's quite normal, or children have to be disciplined after all, or that was the custom in those days, or someone who won't listen has to be made to feel it, etc. An elderly gentleman I once met at a party told me with amusement that when he was a little boy, his mother had swung him back and forth over a fire she had lighted, specially for the purpose of drying his pants and breaking him of the habit of wetting them." Quote from this man, "My mother was the most wonderful person you'd ever want to meet. But that's the way things were done in our family in those days," unquote, he said. Such lack of empathy for the suffering of one's own childhood can result in an astonishing lack of sensitivity to other children's suffering. When what was done to me was done for my own good, then I am expected to accept this treatment as an essential part of life and not question it. This kind of insensitivity thus has its roots in the abuse a person suffered as a child. He or she may be able to remember what happened, but in most cases, the emotional content of the whole experience of being beaten and humiliated has been completely repressed. This is where the difference lies between treating an adult and a child cruelly. The self has not yet sufficiently developed for a child to retain the memory of it or of the feelings it arouses. The knowledge that you were beaten and that this, as your parents tell you, was for your own good may well be retained, although not always. But the suffering caused by the way you were mistreated will remain unconscious and will later prevent you from empathizing with others. This is why battered children grow up to be mothers and fathers who beat their own offspring. From their ranks are recruited the most reliable executioners, concentration camp supervisors, prison guards, and torturers. They beat, mistreat, and torture out of an inner compulsion to repeat their own history. And they are able to do this without the slightest feeling of sympathy for their victims because they have identified totally with the aggressive side of their psyche. These people were beaten and humiliated themselves at such an early age that it was never possible for them to experience consciously the helpless, battered child they once were. In order to do this, they would have needed the aid of an understanding, supportive adult, and no such person was available. Only under these circumstances would children be able to see themselves as they are at that moment, namely, as weak, helpless, downtrodden, and battered, and thus be able to integrate this part into the self. And we'll, I'm sure, because it's after 10, we'll return to that important insight from Alice next week. But I'm encouraging everyone to take it to heart that the fact that they are all our children, and we have to get past this habit we have of taking care of our parent, essentially, the adults, and start taking care of those beautiful children and let them see with our own affect, with our own reaction, that what they are experiencing is suffering and that it matters and that it's wrong. We'll be returning, I know, to the difficulty, to talking about that, and the difficulty of doing that. As we organize for our global freedom, it's all of a piece, as the Sabbatistas show us. Are we supporting them or not? Are we supporting ourselves or not? Do we want to be free or not? Let's start talking with each other about these things. Thank you so much for listening, and I'm so grateful you're there. As always, please stay strong. Take care of your souls, your hearts, spirits. And until next week, peace.
Nowhere.